Dangerous and racist. That is how the Israeli Prime Minister's move is described in wanting to annex large parts of the occupied West Bank if he wins next week's snap election. There's been a huge rebuke upon his announcement from the Palestinians to the Arab world. In this edition of the debate, we will look at whether this move by Netanyahu was decided by himself, or did he get U.S. approval to go ahead with this annexation if he does get elected. First, let's find out more about this development from Mona Kandil, our correspondent who joins us from occupied Ramallah. At this point, Mona, tell us more about the reactions coming through from the Palestinians, and also what is it that you have heard from Palestinian officials in particular when it comes to what is supposed to be the unveiling of this so-called deal of the century?
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, of course, slammed the remarks by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and said that the Palestinians would end all agreements with the Israeli regime, and that the comments of Netanyahu, the so-called attempt to annex the this part, 30% of the occupied West Bank, the Jordan Valley, as illegal and against all international laws. There was a meeting by the Arab League saying that if Netanyahu proceeded with the plan, it would be a dangerous development and a new Israeli aggression by declaring the intention to violate the international law. As you know, there are no talks between the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli regime, no peace process. However, the American administration, and with the coming of Donald Trump as the president of the United States, there is this so-called deal of the century, and they are still preparing to publicly reveal it. However, Palestinians today were saying that while Netanyahu is declaring that if he is being re-elected on September 17 as a prime minister again, then he would be annexing this part of the occupied West Bank, the 30% of the West Bank, and by the way, it's borders between Israel and Jordan and the Palestinian territories and Israel and Jordan, of course. They say Netanyahu would be revealing a new facet of the deal of the century, and that Netanyahu and the Israeli regime can do nothing without the blessing and the approval of the American administration.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mona Kandil talking to us there from occupied Ramallah. Let me introduce our guest, Maxine Dover, journalist and political commentator, joins us from New York. And we also have Saad Nimr, who's a professor of political science at Birzeit University, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. I'd like to welcome you both. And let me first start with you, Maxine Dover. We've had a lot of reactions come through on this, and maybe a simple question should be suffice to start off this debate. And that is, why is this announcement by the Israeli Prime Minister so controversial?
It's controversial because it clearly questions the status quo and raises questions of whether or not this is an election tactic, whether or not this is a tactic similar to the Trump administration's promise to build the wall, which we see 2.5 years later has gone no place other than a lot of noise. And one has to wonder if this is a similar situation on one hand. On the other hand, the area that Netanyahu is speaking about is Area C, which is largely Israeli occupied currently. So there's not a huge difference in actuality here. It's administrative language, there is a difference, but in actuality, the populations are not going to change, and this is an area that is already heavily settled.
Saad Nimr, we're looking at an area in the Jordan Valley in the northern Dead Sea that makes up 30% of the West Bank. That lies in Area C, as our guest just mentioned, which means this is mostly under Israeli military and civil control. That's a large chunk. If you look at the big picture, I don't quite follow, just like many others, how this annexation, if it goes through, can lead to any type of resolve between the Israelis and Palestinians.
Good evening to you and all your guests. And let me say that, yeah, it is almost 30% of the whole West Bank. But remember also that Israel is controlling also 62% of the West Bank, which is under Area C, according to Oslo Agreement, which the Israelis are not even complying with this agreement itself. The idea for the right-wing Israeli parties, including Likud parties and Netanyahu, is to annex the 60%, and this is nothing new. As a matter of fact, even Ariel Sharon talked about that even idea. So it's an old idea, and I don't like to link it with the elections, but rather that it is a continuation of the Israeli plan to annex the West Bank generally and to keep the Palestinians only in around 38% of the West Bank, which is mainly the cities and the villages, mainly populated with the Palestinians. And in this case, these villages and cities will become literally hotels only for the Palestinians once you deprive them from their own land, which is very crucial for them for agriculture and access to Israel. These ideas were supported to a large extent by the American administration in the statements of Friedman, the American ambassador to Israel, who said that Israel had the right to annex the settlements, and settlements spreading all over these 60% of the land, and also by Greenblatt, who said that he used the term Judea and Samaria instead of West Bank, or occupied West Bank rather, which is absolutely going with the same line with the Israelis. But at the same time, as far as the timing, why Netanyahu give that speech now, this is related totally to the idea of the elections, which is coming only in a week. And definitely he would like to get as much as he could from the right wing, and especially from the settlers in the West Bank, who are now exceeding 700,000 or almost 750,000 in West Bank and in Jerusalem, and to give them this kind of present, if you like, to say that the moment I am elected, I'm going to annex the Jordan Valley. Okay. Jordan Valley, even during the all the period, it was disputed, and the Israelis were even all the time saying that we are not going to leave it.
Okay, we keep hearing about that this may be a ploy for the elections, but let me quote Benjamin Netanyahu, Maxine Dover. He has said this is a historic opportunity to apply sovereignty to communities in Judea and Samaria, the way he refers to the West Bank, to commitments there. This is something that Netanyahu has said, and this was under the headline that said Netanyahu seeks to annex parts of the West Bank in coordination with the U.S. So if there were any question marks that this was done with the U.S., it's right there. This is CBS News. You can't get any more domestic channel than CBS. So don't quite understand how, what kind of light does that put this whole development in?
Remember Netanyahu's other speech that said he was in favor of a two-state solution several years ago. We have to wonder what happened to that speech. Jason Greenblatt's opinions at this point are only those of a private citizen. He is no longer part of the administration. He has resigned. Whatever his ideas are, he has every right to express, but only as a private citizen. He is no longer part of this deal of the century setup negotiation. And whether or not the statement that Netanyahu's made on the 17th is one that is rather on, in preparation for the elections on the 17th, whether that is a statement that has the approval of this current administration, I think we have to assume that it's certainly not going against the political position of the administration. Friedman is labeled ambassador of the United States to Israel, so one can assume that whatever he says does reflect the administration. Whether or not this is an election ploy, my colleague in Ramallah is a political scientist by profession. I think your political analysis was quite on target, and one has to wonder if this is purely a political ploy. Benny Gantz, the former head of the military command, and Gabi Ashkenazi, also a former general, and Ehud Barak, a former prime minister and a former general, are pulling very good numbers. Can they pull a majority and form a coalition with other parties that would be seeking what I would term a more equitable solution to the problem of getting a peace situation? We do need a peace. Both the Palestinians and the Israelis and the world at large will benefit from a peace, will benefit from not expending energy, time, money, blood on war that goes no place and that has gone no place for 100 years. Mm-hmm. Peace would be the right condition. I'm not even going to say ideal, but the right condition. Sometimes the right condition isn't one that has all the parts that either party wants, but it has to be made of the parts that create a condition in which both parties to a negotiation can have a substantially satisfactory end.
Asad Nimr, I'd like to ask you about the U.S. involvement here, because at this point, based on the news that says that Netanyahu has done this or made this announcement, and will go ahead with it in coordination with the U.S., obviously sheds light about the U.S. involvement here.
I should think so. The Israeli or the Netanyahu's statement, he said exactly that it's in a kind of a coordination with the Americans or going on with. Did he know what is the deal of the century from his point of view? And I think yes, I believe so. Also, the reaction by the Americans officially was not also clear. They said that our policies did not change. Which policy? What policy you are talking about? The policy that you gave Golan Heights to Israel, which belongs to Syria officially, and that's against the international law, giving Jerusalem to Israel, which is again against the international law. So what is the American policy that is not going to change regarding the Netanyahu's statement? Whether it is also going to give him the settlements, and Mr. Friedman, the ambassador to America, he's the ambassador of America, United States in Israel. So he's representing his own government when he says that Israel have the right to annex the settlements and to annex part of the West Bank to Israel. I don't think that he's going to speak that out of his own mind. Otherwise, his government will tell something otherwise. Nobody commented even on his statement that in that regard. So I would believe that I think that the American are giving a green light to Netanyahu to go on, and I think it's part also of supporting him in his election, especially that Mr. Trump had said quietly that he would like to see Netanyahu back again as a prime minister, and he was so annoyed last time when Netanyahu failed to form a government in the last election just five months ago. So it's quite clear that there is a kind of a green light by the American administration, and I don't think that Netanyahu would dare to give such a statement unless he had some kind of a backing.
Okay, so it seems like we're going to have to ask another question about this from you, Maxine Dorver, about the U.S. Stance. Our guest there said that the U.S. has said, and I'm going to quote, there is no change in United States policy at this time. But it went on to also say that we will release our vision for peace after the Israeli elections and work to determine the best path forward. So is that within the context of this so-called peace deal of the century? And if so, how does annexing contribute to having peace between Palestinians and Israel in this so-called peace plan?
You know, we are talking about the deal of the century. We're talking about a plan for peace. I think this administration is holding its breath to see what happens with this election. And when that is determined, then it will probably determine its direction. I have to wonder whether the direction will be the same if candidate A wins as opposed to candidates B, if the coalition is leaning right or coalition is leaning centrist and left. One has to wonder whether or not that peace plan will contain the same elements. The American policy officially is a two-state solution. The deal of the century, certainly none of us outside of the nucleus of the administration has any idea of whether that deal of the century actually involves a two-state solution, a semi-state solution. I certainly can't comment on that. I have to wonder, and I think all of us have to wonder, whether or not the components remain the same, no matter who is successful in the election.
Okay, Asad Nimr, let's talk about the Arab reaction coming through here. And I'd like to find out from you the sincerity behind some of these statements. For example, the Arab League says these statements are undermining the chances of any progress in the peace process and will torpedo all of its foundations. You also have the reactions coming from Jordan and Saudi Arabia, in particular Saudi Arabia's statement that this is going to, this is very damaging, and it's going to harm any type of peace between Israelis and Palestinians. But, you know, if Israel and Saudi Arabia are establishing ties, though not officially, do you think that these statements are sincere? And we could even put the EU here, but I'd like to focus on the Arab reaction here.
Right, okay. If we are going to talk about the Arab, yes, we were a little bit surprised by the Saudi stand. Not that much surprised with the Arab League, but we also know that the Arab League usually always, they give some statements which we know that it is absolutely empty. It's just, you know, to condemn here and to condemn there without any actual steps to prevent the Israeli measures on the ground. Since the beginning of the Palestinian question till today, it's only just condemnation, and that's it. But with the Saudi, as I said, we were surprised, and I think in spite of the fact that the relationship between Israel and Saudi Arabia are developing in a way or another, but apparently the Saudis are afraid, and I think from their point of view, because now we are talking about a greater role for the resistance role in the region, not only in Palestine, but I'm talking about Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and also Iran, this kind of axle in general of the resistance, there will be a kind of a reaction, and that might be. They were afraid that the Palestinian will start something against the Israeli if the Israeli went on with this kind of statement to execute it on the ground, and that will bring the whole area into maybe, a kind of a new turmoil. So the Saudis were a little bit, I think, afraid, and they want to calm things down a little bit, in spite of the fact that they have a good relation with Israel, but they don't want to escalate the situation in the region to the extent that might be a kind of a confrontation between the Palestinian and the Israeli, and that might bring in also other allies to the Palestinians to this kind of confrontation. That's why maybe I can try to explain why the Saudis will take this kind of a stand. Otherwise, we, as I said, we were a little bit surprised even by the Saudi stand.
Okay, so Maxine Dover, I've had a hard time gauging your stance on this so-called deal of the century. So I'd like to ask you this question in this format and see what I can get out of you. And that is the resignation of Jason Greenblatt, who was the architect of Trump's yet-to-be-announced deal of the century. He worked on it for, 2.5, 3 years, and then he announced his resignation. Isn't that a bit odd? You would think that he'd want to really be there for the, all the celebration that perhaps is going to happen, or nothing to happen. Some are saying that because it's going to fail, he has decided to resign. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's a bit odd. I think it's a lot odd. Jason Greenblatt is a business lawyer who worked for the Trump organization. Perhaps he will go back to his original positions there. Perhaps he has enough knowledge of the Trump organization and now the Trump administration to prefer the business end of things to the political end of things. Yes, I think it is a very unusual stance. Not very long ago, I was in conversation, at a conversation between Greenblatt and another interviewer, and he was absolutely adamant about being prepared to propose the deal of the century. And then, of course, we have the frustration of the last Israeli election that had zero results. and that may have led to this move to depart at this point. They say 2.5 years in a job is reasonably credible, and law firms like to see people work for at least 2 years, and maybe he's following that old adage of at least 2 years in the job and is going back to his business practice. I find it, I think, indicative of the lack of progress that he sees happening. Trump's lawyer, David Friedman, who now holds the position of ambassador, is adamant about the direction that the administration appears to be taking. It's something that follows his personal directions for many decades, and he remains in position. So perhaps he believes the deal of the century will foster the active implementation of his personal ideas. Beyond that, it is odd that Jason Greenberg left. The question is, what are those components of the deal of the century that he knows about, that we do not know about, that made him give up the ghost at this point?
Very well, we're going to end with that. Thank you very much for that, Maxine Dover, journalist and political commentator. Also like to thank Saad Nimr, professor of political science at Birzeit University. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikhail Vitahway and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.